Hey, everyone. This is Sam Williamson, and joining me is John Hart as my co-host. And, you know, tonight we're when we have campfire conversations, sometimes we have them on a topic where someone has something that they have learned and they just want to share it with us. And it's sort of a teaching session, a dialogue teaching session, but it's a teaching session. And then sometimes what we do instead is we just have someone share what's going on in their life. So, you know, Dave Kelber a few weeks ago was just sharing about a struggle he's having going on in his life because he was laid off from his job. And today what we wanted to do is we like the idea of just people being real in their life about what they're currently thinking about, struggling about, hearing God from, even when they don't have the full answer. And so tonight, John Hart and I are going to just talk about things that are sticking in our craw, things that we feel like God's speaking to us about, things that we don't necessarily always have answers for, but we just want to engage everybody in the process. And so I welcome you all, Secret Garden. I welcome you all, Basecamp. And we just want this to be an interactive time where we all share and talk and are personal. And I'm going to ask John to start, partly because we have to admit that John's voice is just much more enjoyable with that Birmingham, Alabama accent. Yeah, it's just more fun to listen to. So, John, what's going on in your life? What do you want to talk to us about? What do you want to talk to us about?
I want to talk about the Alabama Crimson Tide. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure everybody got nauseated with that.
Who are they?
Yeah. And it's not really my favorite team anyway. So, no, I think a couple of weeks ago you and I did another conversation similar to this. And I had alluded to the fact that I had surgery, and now it's been about 4 weeks ago since I had surgery. That was the beginning of really a difficult testing time for me. I went into that not realizing what I was going to go through. The doctor said, "Oh, you'll go through the surgery. The next day you'll get out, you'll go home, you'll be back up and running. It's just a matter of days." Well, it wasn't really quite that easy. So, I had the surgery, and then there were two occasions where I had just some slight complications, but the complications actually resulted in some pretty significant pain. The first time for about 45 minutes, but then the second time, not as much pain, but it lasted for about 5 hours. And that was just kind of a wake-up call to me of the reality of my age, and also the reality of, you know, the good life, health, wealth, prosperity, that's not really guaranteed. And I tend to live my life thinking that it is. So it threw me for a loop, and it I think God allowed some of that to happen to let some deep-rooted beliefs or deep-rooted attitudes in me surface that just called into question, you know, how good is God if he lets us go through things like that? And so about 2 weeks after the surgery, and this was 2 weeks of really fighting off depression and kind of a doom and gloom time, Gary had gotten us to subscribe to a Larry Crabb email that comes out, I think, about once a week. And so about 2 weeks ago, he sent one out, and this is after he had let everybody know that he has had a recurrence of liver cancer.
Right.
And so I'm just kind of faced with, okay, you know, I've got my little minor surgery. He's dealing with liver cancer. I mean, that's pretty serious. And so I realized I got to listen to what this guy says because he's been down this road much further than I have. And in this email, I'm going to quote it. In fact, I think I'm going to just copy and paste this over into the chat boxes. He says, "We cannot count on God to protect us from suffering of any kind or measure. The worst evil can happen to the best Christian." And then he says, "But We can count on God to enable us to draw near to Him, whatever happens, and eventually to experience deep joy when we do. And I thought, wow, that is so good, and that is so true. We really don't have a guarantee of anything in this life, pain-free, problem-free, anything like that. But we really do have a promise that we can experience deep joy when we draw near to Him. And I thought, okay, I want to find that joy because I don't have it. I don't experience that very often at all. And in fact, you know, just a little bit of pain that I went through, and I go through 2 weeks of pretty deep depression. So I just began praying about this, meditating on it. I'm looking at different scriptures, and of course I'm reminded Jesus said, you know, in this world you will have trouble, but don't be afraid because I've overcome the world. And I was also reminded of Romans, God causes all things to work together for good for those who love Him and for those who are called according to His purpose. And so I have to go back to what
Let me just interrupt you a minute.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm curious if the same thing happens to you that happens to me in the midst of certain kind of pain or something where you said you get depressed. Is it the pain in the moment that you think that's causing you depression, or is it the dreary expectation of the continuation? Like if you knew the pain was only going to last for an hour, how depressed would you get?
Right. It was definitely the latter because, again, it was kind of my wake-up call to, I'm 60 years old, I'm going into the stage of life where you can expect health problems, you know, no matter what, no matter how good a condition you're in. And I've never had health any issues at all, so this is a whole new world for me. And, of course, Satan loves to distort everything. You know, he whispers, oh, this is the way it's going to be for the rest of your life. You will never be normal again. God has abandoned you. You know, and we all know those lies. We know those voices. So
in some sense, it's the hopelessness.
Yeah.
It's the bleak future that's depressing.
It
more,
is.
More than the momentary pain. And I don't mean to diminish the pain. I realize it was really bad.
No, that's exactly right. In fact, early on in this whole ordeal, and I think it was the Lord whispering these words to me, all I heard was the hope of heaven. And I kept thinking, okay, now, do I really have the hope of heaven, or is this life all there is? And I realized in my mind, sure, I have intellectual assent. There is a heaven, and I'm going there. But in my heart, I'm really way too wrapped up in the life I have now, and which is really a pretty good life. I've been very blessed, and we've had some really wonderful things. And so I start looking in 1 Peter, because I know Peter wrote to the Jews who were dispersed, who were going through incredible persecution. And in 1 Peter 1, right out of the chute, his first thing is to remind them of the hope of heaven. And he calls it a priceless inheritance that's preserved in heaven for you. And I thought, that makes so much sense. If we truly have this hope of heaven, we are really locked into, I'm going there, it's going to be better than I can even begin to imagine, and it's going to last forever. It will never end. Then I can look at the rest of my life and even look at struggling, suffering, hardship, and realize this is just temporary. I've got all eternity to be completely healthy, you know, no problems. It'll be perfect in every way. So I'm really beginning to walk with the Lord over this and starting to just say, you know, instill within me this hope of heaven. I want to know at the very core of my being that it is a valid hope, and I really want to rest in that so that when things come up, I think, well, you know, this is temporary. I can survive this. I have something better coming. And about a week later, I got another Larry Crabb email. So he's really speaking to me these days. And this is the question that was, it was the bullseye. And again, he's talking about going through difficulties, but his question was, what is it that makes it difficult for you to trust God's heart for you? What is it that makes it difficult for you to trust God's heart for you? And I just went, bam, that is exactly where I am right now. I am having difficulty really trusting in God's good heart for me. And so I'm really beginning the process of working through that, asking God to reveal to me, where is this coming from? Why is it? I have come to a real deep conviction of his love for me, but I have not come to a deep conviction of how good his heart for me is. And that's something I really want.
So let me just interrupt you a minute, because Bob came
sure.
ask a question or makes a comment that I think is right in this area. Bob Kane said, he heard Larry Crabb teach on the book of Jonah. Larry Crabb talked about how the old prophet moved from seeing God as a triumphal God to seeing him as an incomprehensible God to talking to him as an intolerable God, from I don't understand you to I don't like you. Then he said the call is to worship the real God who actually does exist. And I'm wondering if there's part of that there. You know, we want to worship the God who's going to give us the comfort in our life and everything. But what else? What happens when we find there's a God who's beyond us, who might understand things that we don't understand, who says, John, I have something that's even more important for you. I think that's very hard.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of what you're saying is you're trying to get to know the real heart of God, and the circumstances are not the God that you wanted to have, you know? I mean, they're
exactly.
not. You're saying, what kind
exactly.
of God would let this happen to me?
Yeah.
And so is there some way that we all have a little bit of an idolatry? We're worshiping a false God. I mean, I just...
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And in some ways, we're worshiping a false God who doesn't exist, and in some ways, we're actually worshiping... I guess maybe even in the same way, we're worshiping the problem-free life, and we're thinking that is what I want more than anything else. I want that more than I want God. And sometimes
right.
that's true. I mean, it really is. I have to be honest. I was reminded of when my oldest son was sometime during grade school, he got a knee infection, and it got pretty serious. We went to an orthopedic surgeon. And they took an x-ray, and they realized this is something we've got to deal with right now. So they take him in, and they say, Dad, you need to come in and help hold him down. And they put a needle into his knee to draw out this poison. Now, I know a lot of athletes, you know, college football players who've had this kind of procedure done, and they will tell you they're screaming bloody murder. And here's my little son, he's only in grade school, and I will never forget I was holding him down because he had to be still during that, or he could do even more damage to himself with that needle going in.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking up at me screaming, make them stop. Why are you doing this? He's killing me and just crying. But the whole time his eyes were fixed on me, and all I could do was look at him and just try to reassure him this has to happen, because if it doesn't, you could lose your leg. It was serious.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, you know, that's me. I find myself in times when God has allowed something. Yes, it's painful. Yes, it's a struggle. But he knows I have to go through that in order to get what's best for me. And so he looks down at me, and I'm screaming bloody murder. Why are you not taking care of me? And I know he's just smiling and understanding. And when it's all over with, then he reassures me, says, you just had to go through this. You just have to trust that my heart for you is the absolute best. There is nothing in my heart that's bad for you. And So anyway, you know, it's just a good lesson to have to go through to learn. And I really think the more we learn of his heart for us, not intellectually, but really at the level of our own heart, the more we'll be able to trust him. And so the question comes up, well, what is it that makes it difficult for us to trust him? And I've been pursuing that. And in fact, I'm going to put this as a forum question in both Base Camp and Secret Garden, because I would like everybody listening to take this same question to God and just spend some time with him over this and let him speak to you about where are the areas in your life that you're having difficulty trusting his good heart for you, and why? What is it that's causing that to happen? And I'll just share a couple of things that I've become aware of in my own life, and then that's pretty much what I have for tonight. But the first thing that came to my mind was, it just doesn't seem real that he's even there sometimes. You know, we go through this life, and it's like there really isn't a God. You know, the more you're inundated with whatever the media has, the more a secular viewpoint you get, and there's just no reminder here and there that there is an awesome, wonderful God in heaven looking out for us. So I have to really go to Scripture and go to him one-on-one to get. He does care for me. So I think one of the first things for me is it just doesn't seem real. Another thing is I feel like I'm way too married to the good life that we're offered here. I have a lot of that. And, you know, he's trying to free us from that. It's such a deception. What he has to offer us, the life that he has for us, is so much better than whatever the good life is here. But I find myself married to the good life, you know.
It's sort of like God has to take us to a detox center or something, because we're addicted to this thing, but this thing is killing us.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just so deceptive. It's so subtle. You just don't realize how infiltrated we are with this world and this life. And we're America, you know. We have it good. We have plenty of things that we like to complain about, but we have to be honest with ourselves. We really have it good. And that's a danger. That's a real danger for our heart. So, anyway, that's where I am right now. I've got a long way to go. But I'm going to post these, and I really would love for others to take that exercise, and then just come back and share with the rest of us what God reveals to you.
So are you going to post that as a post in Secret Garden and Base Camp, or are you going to put the question on here? How are you going to do that?
I'm going to post it, in both Base Camp and Secret Garden as like a forum question.
Yep, okay.
You know, and that way everybody can come back to it and respond, and everybody in Base Camp and everybody in Secret Garden can participate, even if they haven't heard tonight's campfire.
Yeah, Tom Colwell, which is really good to see you, Tom. It's been a long time since you and I talked. But he was saying, worshiping a worldly God instead of the kingdom God is idolatry, and it always leaves us empty. And I do think that it's hard for us to see that sometimes God has to put us through dark times to perform surgery on us, in a certain sense, to take away an abscess growing on us that is actually leaching away the true lifeblood from our hearts. But it doesn't feel good in the moment. Just like your son had to have that poison drawn out, the process was a little painful, but if that hadn't happened, he could have died or been lamed or who knows what.
Yeah, And you know, and this could almost sound morbid as a conversation, but the bottom line is, it's this life that he has died to give us that he is fighting ruthlessly to pour out into our heart. I mean, he won't give up, and he will allow things because he knows he has such a good thing for us. And, you know, I was reading Tom Mullen's book. He talked about the same thing, going through 3 days of severe pain from bladder cancer. But he talks about, if you've ever heard him, and many of us have heard him in base camp, the man, he is full of joy. He is just absolutely brimming over with joy. And I just think, man, what he went through to get it, I think it's worth it.
So before you, well, you're not going to get off the phone. You better not get off the phone.
That's right.
Brad Weber has a great question. He says, I guess that identifying the areas where I distrust God's heart is the starting point, just like the alcohol has to admit he has a problem. But then what do you do? So let's say we identify, I don't trust God for taking care of my kids. I don't trust God to give me a good job. I don't trust God to heal this sickness. So, you know, whatever it is, you've identified an area you don't trust God. What do you do then?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and a guy that I had lunch with today asked me the same question, and I wasn't real sure how to answer it. One of the things that I have been doing, is just revisiting all the ways that God has shown His goodness to me, and reminding myself that He's already proven His good heart for me. And so then I talk to him about that. I say, you know, you have redeemed my children. They've gone through so many struggles, but man, they're doing great right now. You have redeemed my relationship with my wife. We went through years of struggle, but we are having the best time ever. And I think of things like that, how times that I've gone through that was so hard for me, He has turned them around, and I'm just enjoying the fruit of that now. So I'm reminding myself of that he is going overboard to prove His good heart for me. Now, also an answer to, well, but then what? I think that really comes down to you and your relationship with God. He may take you in a whole different direction than He took me. And that's where it's going to be so helpful for us to get Sam's new book on hearing God, because we need to be able to hear what He says and to move in the direction that He's speaking in. And that'll be so different for each one of us. You know, we all have our own different issues, and He's just delighting in walking with each one of us individually down the road that He has for us. So it, you know, then what may be something completely different for you than it is for me.
I think that's a good stopping point. He has different approaches.
Yeah. So is that a good stopping point to go into yours now?
Sure. although I don't mind just talking about yours the rest of the night. So let me tell you the thing that is intriguing me at the moment, and I would say that it was triggered by a few different events in the last few weeks, and it has to do with how we give advice to each other, okay? And I'm sure if you've been in the Christian world for, I don't know, 3 hours, somebody has given you unsolicited advice. I suppose if you've been anywhere, someone has given you unsolicited advice, right? Except John, I've never given you unsolicited advice, right?
Oh, yes, you have. And I've done the same for you.
I solicit it, though. But so here's what I mean. And actually, it can deal with advice as well as unsolicited. It can deal with requested advice as well as unsolicited advice. So here are the occasions that triggered this for me. It was three different events. One is, guys out there, if we just could start this conversation by saying we are idiots, I think all the women would applaud, and we would be on the way to talk to you about truth. You know, my wife came home from a day of teaching. She teaches English to internationals, and she just was talking about a struggle she had at her class, and she was just talking about it. And what did I do, John?
I don't know.
Oh, come on. You know what I did. What happens to you when your wife talks about a struggle she's going through? I told her how to fix it. Right?
I'll plead the fifth.
All the other guys out there, and the women too, know what you do. And they certainly know what I did. You know, I gave advice that she wasn't looking for. And,
yeah.
You know, I've done this before. I did it again. And I just, and, you know, and she was very gracious in her gentle admonition of me. Then, a couple days later, I was talking to a guy who was telling me about an incident that took place when he was 10 or 12 years old, where a bully at school was hassling him. I can't remember if the bully was beating him up or just verbally abusing him or intimidating him. And his dad discovered it, and his dad sort of said, I want you to stand up for yourself. I want to teach you how to do this, et cetera, et cetera. And what this guy said to me, this is a grown man, you know, in his 40s, maybe his 50s. What he said was, although his dad was teaching him certain things, I can't remember if it was boxing or something, the message that he heard was his dad thought he was a coward. So his dad is saying, I want you to stand up for yourself. I'm going to teach you how to fight. But the thing that he heard was, you are a coward. Okay?
Yeah.
So this was, again, unsolicited advice. And then the third thing I heard was someone asked me to listen to a sermon by their preacher. It was a young, sort of a good guy, I'm guessing his late 20s or early 30s. And he said in a sermon, he said, for 2,000 years, Christianity has prioritized orthodoxy, which just means right belief. But he said, the time has come, finally, for an emphasis on orthopraxy, which is a word that was invented a little over 100 years ago, and it means the right conduct or right action. And I realized that a lot of this all comes – so, I mean, all of these things, these three stories came together, me giving advice, this other guy giving advice to his son, and really our advice tended to be about orthopraxy, honestly, which is the right thing to do. Here's the wise thing to do. Here's the smart thing to do. And I realized the problem is that really most of our behavior – now, this, of course, goes right along with my blog, which is Beliefs of the Heart. Most of the stuff that we do comes out of beliefs. I mean, you know, it was Henry Ford who said, one man thinks he can and one man thinks he can't, and they're both right. Meaning what you believe really determines what you do. But I think that we as Christians, even though we sort of believe the gospel, we tend to just give practical advice about actions to take, which is sort of a modern-day Phariseeism. You know, I mean, in a certain sense, you'd almost want a father whose son is being bullied to say, so what's going on inside you? When he says those things, what do you think about yourself? What do you think about him? I mean, you want someone to pursue what's going on inside the person instead of just giving advice. And I think that us Christians just have this, I'm going to call it a modern-day Phariseeism, but there's a certain kind of, there's a certain instinct we all have, I think. I think there's a certain instinct to just give practical advice about what's the smartest thing to do. So in a certain sense, orthopraxy, a modern – I'm sorry for you guys for all these theological terms. It just happens to be what I'm wrestling with, and I want you to join in the wrestle. I want this to become a mud fest. But it happens to be what I'm dealing with. And orthopraxy, the simple question of the orthopraxy heart is what works? In other words, they're saying, just give me simple, practical advice what to do, advice that works. But I think that most of the time, we as Christians who believe in the gospel and everything, it's still an outside-in solution. You know, we know that our solutions are not outside in, it's inside out. And yet, why do I tell my wife how to teach her English students? She knows better than I do. She's not looking for my practical advice, unless she asks for it. she's sharing her heart, and I should be sort of determining what's going on inside her heart before I just give some stupid advice. You know, and the problem is practical advice doesn't always work. I mean, if you ask the question, just what works? What works? What's the thing that just works? Look at the life of Job. I mean, he probably lived a more righteous life than me, and maybe even, John, a little more righteous life than you, although that's harder to determine. And his life didn't work out that well for a long time. In fact, you're just talking about yourself with all the pain. You know, we sort of want a solution of saying, just how do I take away the pain? But I think God wants something a little deeper. Or think about the martyrs. You know, if they just asked the question, what works, they would not have said, I believe in Jesus and I won't recant. But I think that I'm wrestling to even articulate it. So not only do I not have a solution, I don't quite even know how to describe this. So I appreciate your patience. If you read books out there, aren't there, I mean, just visit Christian Publishing's house, you know, Zondervan, I can't remember them all. And you look at the book titles. It's 7 Steps to a Better Marriage, 3 Steps to Handling Your Finances, 5 Ways to Raise Your Kids. These are all just practical advice, but I think that we miss it. It ends up being very practical. It's the modern-day Phariseeism, in my mind. And what we miss is, what is the real belief that's driving it? I mean, with the 7 Steps to a Better Marriage, not always humble mind, unfortunately. But, I see people give advice to kids that breaks their hearts, and it's good advice. It's not that the advice is bad. But the advice
is missing. What do you think?
Go ahead, yeah.
Well, yeah, what do you think is that the core belief underneath that?
Underneath what?
The our propensity to try to give advice, try to work out the 7 steps to a better marriage, you know, to be so practical.
I think that we miss very often. We still think, even though the gospel says it's what you believe, you know, it's faith, not works, that saves us. We think of that as theological terms, but not in life terms. What Christians have taught for thousands of years, 2,000 years exactly, is you're not only saved by the cross. In other words, you're justified by the cross, but you're also sanctified by the cross. We begin to grow holy by the cross, not by our practical advice. But I think we just keep slipping back into the thing that I really need are the 3 steps to handle pain. You know, and what you're saying is, no, you are saying the thing I need to, in fact, my conversation goes hand in glove with yours. You were saying to us just a little bit ago, the thing I really need to know is the real God. It's to have the right belief in the real God. That's what I needed in the middle of my pain more than anything else, I think is what you were saying.
Yeah.
But I think that all of our instincts are still sort of the fleshly instincts to say, no, John, you just need these 3 advice for pain. You know, 1, drink plenty of fluids. I don't know what they are, so I'm making these up, and they're really bad. But you were saying, I needed to know the real God instead of my false God. And I think so when I think of people who give me advice, unsolicited and sometimes solicited, I get bugged sometimes. I mean, I remember picking a guy up at the airport and I won't go into this long description of this one poor guy, but sometimes when they give advice, I want to say, do you think I'm stupid? You know, have you ever had that reaction?
Yes.
You know, the truth is,
everybody knows that.
The truth is, orthodoxy, which means right belief, will always read to orthopraxy, which is the right practice. That's why James can say faith without works is dead. He's saying if you don't have works, you don't really have true faith. You don't have the true life-changing, heart-enlivening faith. He said because real faith always leads to the right practice. The problem with the right practice, which is sort of say whatever works, is it leads to, and this is another theological term, I shouldn't use it, but it's just what I've been thinking about. Sorry, folks. It leads to heterodoxy, which means anything. So if we just say, I want advice, what works? Well, do you know how many unmarried couples are living together? Because they say, I just want to know if it works. Does it work for me to live with her? And if it doesn't, well, yeah. You don't want me to marry someone and then divorce them, do you? So if we start just saying, what's the best practical advice, instead of, what is just truth? I mean, I don't understand why God can let you experience pain. I don't understand that. I can give you some theological answers, by the way. But the truth is I don't understand it, honestly. But I do know that saying, for some reason, I know that God is good and God loves me and cares me, that is the answer I need to know. More than all the right advice. Now, good advice can still be helpful. If I don't know how to change my tire, and I say, hey, John, could you tell me how to change my tire? I'm not saying that practical advice is bad. I'm just saying that sometimes I think we're too quick to give practical advice, often unsolicited advice, when in fact doing that does the exact opposite. Instead of strengthening their belief, sometimes we actually rob them of a belief. You know, we say, what do you think, I am an idiot? Or this poor guy whose dad told him not to be afraid of the bully, the poor kid said, thought, my dad thinks I'm a coward. And then he began to think he was a coward.
You know, as you're saying this, I'm thinking about the way Jesus lived his life. And it wasn't practical always. In fact, quite often, it was very impractical. And the disciples were always questioning, why are you doing that? You know, why are you doing this? It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. That's the truth of the gospel, is it doesn't make sense unless we believe in a God that we can't understand.
Yeah.
That's really good. I like that. And that's why Jesus was always asking questions. You know, he says to the guy, you know, who's at the pool of Siloam. Is it the pool? No, it's the pool with the seven porticos. He says, do you want to be healed? He just asks questions before he does something. Do you have faith? And the guy says, I sort of believe, but help my unbelief. You know, Jesus was very good at just sort of pursuing what's the real heart issue instead of just giving practical advice right off the cuff.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Colwell just said, what is in the heart will come out of the mouth. So many times my heart isn't right. One evening, my wife confronted me with a statement, you would rather be right than loved. Bang.
Oh,
straight to the heart. But that's true. I mean, I think there's a certain sense, I think my life will go well if I have just all the practical common sense in the world. But you just said, I was doing everything right, but I still had to have this surgery. I did everything right. Our life doesn't go right with all the practical advice. We really need to pursue the heart. I don't want to disparage practical advice. You know, if a couple's having a marriage problem and they never communicate, it's good to teach them how to communicate. I don't want to disparage that, but I don't think that's the core issue. I mean, I'm struggling with trying to say, when someone's in need, how important is it to give them the best practical advice versus how important is it to find out what is that idol in their life? The idol of a false god.
Exactly.
And that's false another, God is keeping them. Go ahead.
I was just going to say another way to say it is, and I'm trying to do this more and more, when I encounter someone going through a situation, the question is, instead of giving them advice, the question is, what is it that God is trying to surface that's below the surface right now? Hmm. What's he trying to bring up to the surface that is a wrongly held belief, or you've fallen for a lie, or there's an anger that you didn't realize was there. Maybe there's a jealousy that you didn't realize was there. And to really go for the heart level issue instead of just, you know, well, a priest has this, and this will fix you up.
And the truth is, even in our own mind, we know it won't fix everybody up. I mean, we've been trying those same practical steps ourselves. Has it worked for us? Has it? What's the chance it's going to work for someone else? So Tom Colwell again said, for myself, it all comes down to me believing that the heart of God is good. You know, I wonder if we need to remind our little kids of that, if they're afraid of a bully, or if they're, I don't know what it is. In some senses, it's not that practical advice is bad, it's just that it's secondary to addressing the core false beliefs that we're all living under.
Well, and there is I agree, there's wisdom, there's sound advice, but there's also a danger to those, and that is, the danger is we begin trying to arrange for the life that we want on our own terms. And if we can make it work out the way we want it to work out, we don't need God.
And I think God in his mercy, I agree with you, I think God in his mercy continues to have to do surgery on us. He keeps saying, right. You know, there's one more tumor in your life, Sam. This is going to hurt a little bit, but you've got to get rid of that tumor because it's killing you. It's sucking away your life. And that tumor in my case might be, I think I know the way my life should go. And I'm pretty sure, God, you're going to get it wrong. You know, that's why I'm anxious. I know the way my life should go, and I know that God's going to get it wrong. If I really believed the heart of God, I wouldn't be that concerned about God getting it wrong.
I just think that's powerful.
So those are the things that's going on in my heart. I mean, I'm still trying to sort it all out, but I realize that there's an instinctive habit of my heart to want to give practical advice. When I think the truth is that we somehow have a false God. The false God of I know how things should be, the false God of my advice is great, the false God of if we just do the right things, our life will work right, the false God of a God who loves me wouldn't let difficult things happen. I mean, there's probably a million, there's as many false gods out there as there are people. And since we probably have multiple ones, there's probably billions of false gods out there.
I love what Bob Kane just put. He said, that's why Jesus had to ask the disciples why they doubted him when they awakened him in the boat during the storm. They accused him of not caring.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think I love the way I really think he was really getting to an issue when he said, why did you doubt me? That's a good question. Why?
And we doubted you because we didn't really trust the heart of God.
Yeah.
Or we didn't trust that he has the power. You know, either he doesn't love us or he doesn't have the power. But if we can really believe that he both loves us and has the power, then I think we can deal with you know, you were talking about the momentary pain isn't what was depressing you. It was the thought that this will go on, it'll never end. But what gave you hope again was the hope of heaven, which is, in some senses, knowing the heart of God, that he has a real life for us that's going to be good and rich and pure and true and whole and healthy and all those things. So if I had to give any advice, I would say, before we give advice, let's check the idols in our own life. And maybe part of it's checking the idols in our own life, and part of it's checking the idols in somebody else's life. The idols meaning the false beliefs. You know, when my wife was sharing about what was going on with her students, she actually knew what to do. I don't think she had a false idol in her life. I think she was just pretty calm and collected. The false idol in my life was, I know what to do, you know?
Yeah.
God
yeah.
forgive me, and Carla forgive me. But, you know, even this poor boy who was told to stand up to the bullies, I think it would have been better if someone could have just said to him, so how do you respond when someone bullies you? Are you scared? You know, I mean, pursuing a little bit with questions before giving advice, I think. because maybe he was scared. Maybe he was a coward, and I don't think he was, but maybe he had been. And that would have been a better thing to deal with than just saying, here's how to put up your dukes, here's how to throw a good punch.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's really good. You're going
to
put this into a blog, right?
I'm going to put it into a blog, although I don't know how to say it. But it's sort of orthodoxy, which I still believe the Christian life is about right belief. And the main thing we struggle with is wrong belief. But I think our natural reaction is orthopraxy, which is we all want to do the right thing. But we know, I mean, Jesus said, outside in doesn't fix us. It doesn't really fix us. Inside out, which is dealing with the heart and what we really believe and what we think is true about God, that's the only thing that'll give us life and hope and joy and delight. So.
Yep.
As Candace said from Secret Garden, she said, it's one more way of avoiding that deep, intimate walk with God that he longs for me to engage in. And I think she's absolutely right. If I just know the right thing to do, I don't need God. I just have this great wisdom. But I don't think great wisdom is what we need. The truth is we need wisdom with a capital W. We need the living wisdom of his presence that says, I don't even understand, where we can say, I don't understand what's going on, but I do understand that you love me.
Yeah. And there are so many times when wisdom really doesn't answer the question. Life is just too confusing, and we get too disoriented.
Yep. So, in some senses, even though John and I did not rehearse this, I think that our two sharings went hand in glove. And I guess in closing, I would want to say to everybody, I think our real biggest problem in life is not circumstances, and it's not even what other people have done to us. Our biggest problem in life, I think, is for some reason we don't really trust the heart of God. I love the way you started that. So, John, I'm going to end my session by saying I think you're right. I think our biggest problem in life is not the circumstances. It's not what people have done to us. It's somewhere along the line we don't trust the heart of God. Now, how we learn to trust the heart of God is a different issue. But I think that our problem is we don't know how to trust the heart of God. John, do you have any closing comments before we close?
Just ditto that very same thing. And, it goes back to, again, like Candace said, he wants such intimacy with us. And if we would just learn to really give in to that, golly, life would go so much better for us.
Hey everybody, Secret Garden Base Camp. It's good to be friends again. We're always friends, but it's good to be together. And John, I really appreciated your just sharing what you're in the middle of. I mean, sometimes it's fun to hear somebody give teaching from the end of the road, but sometimes it's just fun for me to hear somebody in the middle of the road talking about where they're at. I feel encouraged.
Well,
I say I'm not alone.
Yeah, and I just think it's funny how God engineered, because like you said, we kept it a secret from each other what we were going to talk about.
We absolutely did.
It really did. It just fell right into with each other's tongue.
So now you got to post that blog on Secret Garden and Base Camp so that we can all respond.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this has been
great. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much. This is just fun to be together. I really enjoy our nights together. I hope you guys enjoy them half as much as John and I do.
Yeah.
Half as much would be pretty good.